heck chose this music.
But Erica, didn't you want the Chronicles music?
This is the wrong Chronicles. We're Latinos.
Welcome, mi gente, to the Latinx Chronicles, a podcast dedicated to sharing the success stories of nuestra gente in the Latinx community. We want to bring the stories that no one else is sharing to help educate and inspire others to grow and make a difference. Subscribe, follow, and let us know what topics you want to know more about by emailing us at thelatinxchronicles@gmail.com.
Welcome. Hello, Mr. Hip. How are you?
How are you, Erica?
I'm doing great. I had a fabulous day. I have makeup on because I had a photo shoot today.
I was going to say makeup on at 7 p.m. I'm thinking you're about to go out or something.
I told my husband, should we go out for a drink? I do wear makeup, but not this much. But we're so excited.
Thank you. That is
our guest for today. We are still celebrating Women's Month, which I told Hip, we need to celebrate it all year long, right? Not just 1 month a year. So
for the audience, she's been on me about this every day, all day. She says we should interview just women.
Yes.
Just women.
Yes, we're amazing.
We're chingonas. We're amazing.
We're amazing.
So much talent. We multitask so much, right?
The world would be such a better place with women in charge.
I agree 100%. Yes.
So let's welcome our guest. Should I say it in Spanish or in English? Jueza, Beatriz Santiago, Judge Beatriz Santiago.
Hi, everyone. Hi.
You are our first Puerto Ricana on the show, which is really exciting because,
thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm Mexicana. Hip, as we know, is
from Puerto Rico.
There we go.
That's right.
Yes.
That's one of the things, we know a lot of people, right? And we want to bring people on, but we also want to have diverse people of what our Chicago looks like, what our country looks like.
Different Latino backgrounds, Cubanos, yeah. Mexicanos, Ecuatorianos, from all parts.
Guatemaltecos.
From all parts of Latin America, the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And, we're very excited. You know, a judge. We have a judge on our podcast.
That's a big deal.
I don't think you understand how much of a big deal this is.
Do you know a woman judge, Hip?
No.
I mean, other than Beatriz. But I don't think.
Just Beatriz.
I've gone to court
unless we're talking about Judge Sotomayor, but I don't know her personally. I just see her on television.
Right. No, but I feel like
she is amazing, by the way. Like, just like one of my role models. She's amazing.
So, Beatriz, when Hip and I were talking about the podcast and who we were going to have as guests one day, right? And we were talking about if we ever run out of people to have on the podcast. And I'm like, no, I don't think we're ever going to run out of people.
On my board,
I have Sotomayor, because either you go big or go home.
Right.
And you go for the big stars. And
you
one
go,
day,
go for
right?
The right.
There's so
right.
many powerful Latinos
well, mark,
out
mark
there.
Mark our words. We will have Sotomayor one day on our podcast.
And when you do, I am going to be there right along with you.
That is why she has it on that board. Because she did tell me, Hip, we're going to make sure we make it to where we have her on our podcast. We want to showcase every Latino, just real people, from where they came to where they're at today.
Yes.
How they got there.
Yes.
So, yeah. Judge Santiago, can you tell us that de pequeñita, how did you get to where you're at today? Tell us your story.
So I am the first born in my family. My parents came from Puerto Rico. They met here. They moved to Humboldt Park, and I have been living in Humboldt Park my whole entire life. And I still live here. I bought a house here. I'm not going, hopefully, anywhere. And I'm going to stay in Humboldt Park for the rest of my life. I grew up in an urban neighborhood where at the time, Humboldt Park isn't, back then wasn't trendy as it is now. Yes. It was very drug and crime infested, very gang infested. It was people of color, brown and blacks. You know, other races were scared to live where we were. I am a product of the Chicago public school system. I graduated from a grammar school, James Lowell School, which is on Hershey's Foggy. And then from there, I went to Lane Tech High School. From Lane Tech High School, I went away to college at the University of Illinois in Urbana. I was homesick. I came back home for law school and did my 3 years of law school in downtown Chicago at John Marshall Law School. Ooh. I graduated. I had to take the bar, which was 2 days of hell.
You made it.
Fortunately, I passed it the first time around because after I took the bar, I walked out and I was like, okay, I need to figure out what to do with my law degree because I'm not taking that exam again. I know I failed it. Never again. I need to figure something out. But thankfully, I passed it the first time out. I knew I wanted to be a criminal attorney. At the time, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be a state attorney or a public defender. So while I was in law school, I had the opportunity to intern with the public defender's office. And I was able to go to court and I was able to do a trial under the supervision of an attorney. And I was able to observe, you know, the atmosphere at the public defender's office and also observe the state attorney's office, you know, and see, and decided that I really enjoyed my internship. I really enjoyed the people that were employed with the public defender's office and knew that that was the way I wanted to go. It took a while to get there. There was a hiring freeze after I graduated. So I did personal injury work for like 3 years until I was finally able to start working with the public defender's office. And so I started there January of 99. And basically stood there until I ascended onto the bench in December of 2012.
Wow.
Great. Was that your ultimate goal? Like when you became an attorney, you passed. Was that the goal to become a judge?
A judge? No, honestly, it wasn't. I thought that I was perfectly content being a public defender. I was happy at my job. And of course, like anything else, you know, there's days where you complain. But overall, I had job satisfaction. And then a person that I know that's very politically connected called me and advised me that there were openings for the Sixth Sub-Circuit, which is ultimately where I ran in and encouraged me to run to become judge. And then that's when the idea started coming into my head.
Yes. So you didn't have this idea from like high school, you know, wanting to have a law degree in high school, or you always knew you wanted to have a law degree and then the judge came later, or?
When I was in high school, originally, I thought I was going to be a teacher.
Wow.
But being the oldest in my family, it fell on me to have to tutor my younger siblings and my nieces and nephew. And I realized very quickly that I did not have the
patience. Like, no, thank you. I don't have that kind of patience.
I could not. I was like, I
would bless all the teachers.
Yeah, no, I mean, hats off to them because I couldn't do it. I would explain it once, twice. After the third time, I'm like, oh, what is there not to
understand? I love it. And the Puerto Rican just came out. You heard her? She's like, oh, no. I love it.
Where you felt like you see the videos where you felt like taking the chancleta and hitting them across the head with it. Like, you know, get this through your head. Like, how else am I going to explain this? So I knew that teacher wasn't for me. And then at some point I explored the possibility of being a social worker, pero I knew that para eso yo no servía tampoco because, you know, I'm too sensitive. I cry in cartoons, you know, I cried over the Lion King. So can you imagine me like trying to take some kids away from the parent and crying? I was like, I can't
but,
do that.
But now I'm assuming you're not sensitive on the bench.
No.
You do some social work on the bench too. I mean, right? When you're talking to people.
Yes, you lose sensitivity. Let me tell you, once I became a public defender, you know, you kind of like lose some sensitivity. You're like, whatever. You see people crying, you're like, yeah, okay, tough enough. You know,
crocodile tears.
Yeah.
Crocodile tears. No me venga con eso. You know, like, yeah.
This reminds me of a show that I was watching on Hulu. I don't know if any of you have watched it. I just pulled it up because I couldn't remember the name. All Rise.
Yes, yes.
It was like just what you're telling me right now. Like, this is your story, right? She was a public defender and then was working, I think, at the state attorney and then became a judge. And and then I didn't know, right? So I don't know if this is a case. So you're going to tell us a little bit more how it's political as well. Once you become a judge, it's very political.
Well, on the show
on Netflix and Hulu.
Well, I mean, like, to become a judge, if you're gonna run for judge, it's very political. But then it's kind of weird because then once you become a judge, you cannot be political. You know, your whole job is to be impartial, to be unbiased. But then if you became a judge, because there's two ways to become a judge, and if you become the judge the way I did, which was running for it. Every 6 years, you then have to go up for retention. So it becomes a little political again. So it's kind of weird. You know, like, you're not supposed to be political, but I don't care what anybody says. It is a little political. So
let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that sometimes folks go to the voting polls or to the voting box and they get their piece of paper and they focus on the main names. They focus on presidential elections. They focus on the governor. They focus on the mayor. And I think that when you get to the last pages,
it is the last
to pages. Vote. Yeah. It's the last pages. You have the list of all the judges that you vote. And a lot of people ignore those pages or they do not know the names on those pages. So
or they just mark whatever.
Or they just mark whatever. Exactly.
They just mark whatever. AB. It's usually two, right? I think it's just, so AB, or.
Yeah.
So can you help?
Or this for retention, it's either yes or no. So like the next, when you see my name in 2024, it'll be either yes, keep her as a judge, or no, don't retain her as a judge.
So explain to the listeners why it's important to really get to know who these judges are before they make a selection and vote, because I feel that our choices have consequences for our city. The way, in my opinion, the way crime is controlled, the way things are handled are from, you know, it really starts, in my opinion, it's really important on how judges take care of our city. So putting the right people in those roles to me is important. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, I mean, so you obviously want people that are qualified. You don't want somebody in there that doesn't have enough years as an attorney or doesn't really know what they're doing. You want to have qualified, you know, people to be judges. You also want a judiciary that is representative of the population that they serve. For example, like, there's in Cook County, there's about 400 judges. Out of the 400 judges, there's only like 40 Hispanic judges, maybe 45 out of 400. And yet we're 25% of the Cook County population.
Oh, wow.
You know, there's a problem with that. Where, I mean, 40 out of 400 is
10%.
Yeah. See, math is not my forte, which is why I went to law.
Got you. We got the math guy here, the mortgage guy.
You would think, you know, if we're 25% of the population, then at least 25% of the judiciary should be Hispanic. It should reflect.
Usually we have about 90 judges.
We should have about 100 if there's 400.
Yeah.
So you want it to be representative of the population you serve. And then at the same time, you know, everybody is an individual. Everybody brings their own viewpoint into it, their own experience, their own beliefs. And if, you know, if you're going to go before a judge, you want to go before a judge that you feel understands where you're coming from, your situation, and is not living in a glass house that doesn't understand, you know, coming from the suburb that doesn't know anything about the city or the unique problems that face people of color.
Right.
So it's important. I just think it's a disservice to people not to care more about judicial elections, because everybody at one point or another is going to go before a court. And when you go before a court, you know, whether it's by, you know, traffic, God forbid, criminal, or, you know, like child support or paternity or divorce, will, you know, and anything, you know, you want to know that the judge that is before you is going to be fair, is going to understand where you're coming from, and that you're going to at least get a fair shake.
Is there a way for our listeners to do research on individual judges on the web? Any websites you recommend?
Yes. So every time there's an election, there's different lawyer groups, like the Puerto Rican Bar Association, the Hispanic Lawyers Association, the Women's Bar Association, the Lesbian and Gay Bar Association. You know, there's at least 10 to 11, about 12 different lawyer groups that do investigations and interviews of the judges or potential judges, judicial candidates. And then after that, they make recommendations. And all those recommendations, you could find them online by looking up voteforjudges.org. They put them up there. Yeah.
I'm writing it down. So they put their recommendations after doing their research.
Correct.
And this is from all different associations, correct?
And you'll see each of the different bar association ratings for that particular candidate or judge. And it's up every election season, and it's called voteforjudges.org, and you'll see exactly how each person was rated.
That's great.
This is great information for our listeners, because as I said in the beginning, the majority of people just focus on the primary elections, what they see on TV all the time, and they kind of either skip the last few pages or they just fill in the blanks, not really knowing who they are voting for or the consequences that it has. Like you said earlier, you know, only 10% of the judges reflect our Cook County population. We want to get 25% to mm-hmm. be Latino so that it can reflect our community the right way.
Correct.
We need more representation, and you know, and definitely not just in this, right? And everywhere. And we're gaining momentum, but the more we talk about it, the more we bring things like this into light, and then people can make their decision, right? Now, once you've made an educated decision, then you feel better about what you're doing, right? When Hip and I talked about having you, we were like, well, I know you pick him, but most people don't know, because we've seen it. I mean, mm-hmm. we've done it. We've been guilty of it, right? Where you're seeing people are like, who should I vote for? Sometimes you recognize a few people from commercials or a sign in someone's front yard. But, you know, making sure that we're making educated decisions, because they affect us long term.
Oh, yes.
And what you said, you want judges that are impartial. You want judges that are fair.
And again, we need as many people talking about this, because education is key. I found I'm one to admit, many years ago when I first started voting, I was just filling in the blank. I didn't know who these judges were, so I would just fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Well, as I got
something, because most people skip them altogether. Yeah.
So, you know, as I got older and I was taught by someone what it meant to vote for a judge, it made me think differently. So when Eric and I were discussing on who to have on our podcast, I did think of you, because I think that this is an opportunity for not just showcase a Latina climbing up the ranks, but at the same time, an opportunity for us to educate our listeners on the importance of doing our homework and doing our research so that we select the right judges to be on the bench.
Correct. And,
you know, with that, Judge Santiago, I got to ask you, being a woman, it is Women's Month. How hard was it climbing up the ranks?
Well, you know, let me tell you, when I ran for judge, I was the only woman in my race. I was running against 5 men.
Oh, wow.
So I was the only female, and I was running against 5 men, and I happened to be the endorsed candidate for the Democratic Party. in my race. And you would think that by 2012, things would change. And it was before the Me Too movement, but it got so dirty that I found out that one of my opponents was going around, of course, saying that the only reason I was endorsed by the Democratic Party was because I did sexual favors for certain people.
Oh, wow. It gets that bad. Yeah,
to become the endorsed candidate. And, and there were attorneys until they got to know me that actually believed that. Because, you know, obviously I couldn't get on there on my own strength, on my own intelligence, ethic, on my own background, on my qualifications and recommendations. You know, I had to get by. I had to get to the top by performing sexual, you know, favors to make
it. Probably didn't help that you were also a Latina.
Yeah.
Because people still see Latinas, you know, differently than they would see a woman from another. Yeah.
Some people are just closed-minded.
I'm sorry?
Some people are just closed-minded.
Yeah.
You know, they just, you know, wow.
Yeah.
The other thing that this made me just having this conversation, how many Latinas are judges that are your colleagues, Beatriz? Do you have, I know you said 10%, so about 40 Latino judges. How many of those are women?
I know that there, you know, oddly enough, there's more women than men. I would have to get back to, you know,
but that's
back.
Good. That's good that there's more than men too.
Yeah, there's more women than men for sure. And for some reason, like
more women than men, only of those 10%, correct?
Yeah, of the Latino judges.
Yes. Got it.
Yeah, of the Latino judges. So, like, for example, I know when I was running, even guys would say they perceive us as more sympathetic, more compassionate, more fair, even men, which is funny, you know. But when I was going door to door campaigning, they're like, oh, you're the only woman. I'd rather have a woman judge than a man judge. They perceive us to be more, as I said, more compassionate, more fair. They would get a better deal in front of us than a man. So for some reason, you know, women tend to do fairly good in elections. Yeah. Yeah. So there tends to be more women than men in the judiciary, and as far as Latinos.
So how about, you know, other young women that have passed their bar exam and that are just becoming an attorney now? Like, what do you recommend them to do? Like, what if they see and hear this podcast and say, oh, I would love to be a judge one day. How do I get there? Right. What are the steps I need to do other than working hard and right? Some of those things that just come naturally to us Latinos a lot of the times. But so what is something a young woman need to do to get to where you're at today?
And how do they overcome those obstacles that you've gone through too? I would love to hear a little bit about that.
After I became a public defender, right after I graduated from law school, I got involved with the bar associations. And I was extremely active with the bar. So I got to know a lot of attorneys, because you get to know, because it's only the same people over and over again in any organization that are active, right? You know, you could have an organization like Latino Realtors Association. You could be 100 members strong, but there's only like maybe out of that 100, 30 or 20 who are active, who go to every meeting and who do all the work, right? You know, and it's like that in any profession, is, you know, in the law as well. So you could have a bar association and it could be like 100 members strong, but you're going to see the same gatos over and over again. You know, you're going to see the same people over and over again, the same people that go to every, you know, that go, that volunteer, that go to every meeting, that do the same thing. So you get to know people that way. And then, you know, through that, you get to, I got to meet some people that were also kind of political, and I started going with them to different events, and you start networking and you start getting to know people that way. So for me, it's just big to volunteer in the different associations and also in your community, because it, you know, I was very active in the Puerto Rican bar, and one thing that we stress in the Puerto Rican bar is being active in the community, giving back into the community as well.
Giving back. You've made it, right? People have a stereotype sometimes of Mexicanos, Puerto Ricanos, right? And so you've made it. Now you got to give back to your community and lift others.
Right, exactly. You can't forget where you came from. As you're moving up, you have to reach behind. You have to reach your hand behind you and pull the other person up.
I love that.
Yeah. So you get to know different people that way. And then, and also for the different bar associations, they consider it very important that you do litigation so that you're in the courtrooms actually trying cases. They give a lot more weight to that for some reason. The transactional attorneys, I don't necessarily think it's fair, but that's the way it is. So they want attorneys that have a lot of litigation experience. So a lot of litigation experience, a lot of networking, a lot of community involvement is how you could overcome and get ahead.
Listen up, people, right? Listen up.
Listen to that advice, I think is great advice. And it's a shame that we live in 2022 and women still have to go through the obstacles that you have gone through. It's unfortunate, but I am very proud to see a strong woman like you standing up for herself and overcoming all the malice that's out there.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. So Eric and I both want to hear different advice from different people. And a lot of times, whether you're an adult or you're a teenager, a young child, you look up to specific people and to the advice certain folks give and provide. If you think back to when you were 18 years old, or as you were growing up as a young adult, what advice would you give yourself, to your 18-year-old self, to your 22-year-old self, to your 30-year-old self, that other people can learn from?
To me, I would say is believe in yourself no matter what. Don't listen to the naysayers. Believe in yourself and keep going forward to meet your goal, whatever your goal is. When I went to grammar school, and even at, and I went to Lane Tech, which is a selective enrollment school, which is supposed to be a little better than a neighborhood high school, when I went to a counselor and asked her to help me fill out my college application because I wanted to go to college, and in particular, I wanted to go to this particular college, University of Illinois, which is a rather good, public university.
It's hard to get in. Take credit for that. It's hard to get in.
It is hard to get in. It is hard to get in.
Yes.
So she tried to discourage me and tell me that I was never going to make it.
Wow.
I should apply somewhere else. And I'm like, yeah, well, anyway, here's my application. I need you to help me out. So I kind of ignored it, and I just put in for it anyway. And thank God that I got in, because actually it was the only university that I applied for. So if they had rejected me,
you knew you were going to get in.
I was like, wow. I look back at it, I'm like, that was dumb. I should have applied for it.
You had confidence in yourself, Beatriz, even back then. You were like,
God. I was like, wow, I got lucky. Can you imagine if they had told me no? I would have been like, what am I going to do now? But if I could give advice to myself now, do research on the school that you want to go to. Go visit, because I applied to University of Illinois not really knowing anything about it other than a friend of mine from the neighborhood that I met at Lane Tech, who was a year older than me, went there. So I kind of wanted to go there too, and I wanted to get away from the neighborhood. I knew for me to be able to succeed, I needed to leave the neighborhood. I needed to leave my friends, because I knew I didn't have the discipline. I needed to get away from everybody so that I could apply myself and make sure that I could, graduate. So I knew that entailed me going away, which is probably why I didn't apply to any other school.
You were determined.
I'm sorry?
You were determined.
I was determined. So So I would say, you know, go visit the schools, do your research, and it doesn't matter what your grades are. It doesn't matter what anybody says. If you like that school, apply for it. You just never know.
Maybe find someone that believes in you, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You had this person. I've heard this before. This is not the first time.
No, it's not the first time.
On the podcast in general, when talking to friends, where there was someone that, you should apply, you should try this, you know, a city college, or you should try this or that.
They give you words of discouragement instead of encouragement.
They do. And I can't even remember if it was in high school. It may have been the high school level where they're like, you know, where they were like, oh, you know, just concentrate on finding a good job. And, you know, and getting a good job, maybe being a secretary or something like that, and finding a good husband. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Right.
You know, I was like, yeah, okay, so this is what I want to do. And you're going to help, you're, you know, this is your job. You're supposed to help me with this. So,
but there's a common theme with that, because as Erica stated earlier, we hear that quite a bit. But what I've noticed with not just people that we have spoke to on our podcast, but individuals within our own industry and other professionals, it seems like that discouragement creates some sort of fire within the individual as well, where, no, you can't tell me I can't do this. I'm going to go get it. I'm going to go do it.
Right. I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you.
I'm going to show you you're wrong.
I'm going to show you that
I can do
it.
Prove you, right? Yeah. Prove to you that I'm not going to be another statistic of how they look at us, right? They see us and they automatically assume.
Right. And, you know, and I was, you know, and I'm old. So they definitely, you know, given where I came from, the environment, they definitely expected me to be a statistic. And just growing up, looking around me, I knew from little that I did not want to end up like that. You know, I didn't know what career I was going to take, but I knew I didn't want to end up being a statistic. Like somehow I knew I could do better than that.
Good. And you did.
How do you stay?
Yes, God is good. God is good. Yes.
How do you stay bipartisan in your role?
So, well, you know, I do criminal. So there's really no politics into it, you know. So I have criminal cases before me. I don't have the felonies yet. So I do traffic. I do misdemeanors where the worst I could do is give somebody up to a year in jail. So, so, you know, I'll listen to the case. I could, you know, and there's a burden of proof, which is proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which I take very seriously. So, because a lot of times, like, even though, I mean, I'm embarrassed to say it, but like on a day off, like if they put on like snack or, you know, like first 48 or something like that, I will kick off my feet. Y me quedo todo el día viendo.
Like, that's the first 48. It's so addictive.
First 48 or Dateline mysteries or, you know, just anything, you know, anything true crime. I love it.
Me too.
And I get appalled sometimes by when a case goes before a jury and then they say the person is guilty. And I'm like, on such flimsy evidence. I'm like, how scary is that? That you have to like put your hands on 12 people and how quickly they could say, you know, guilty. So I take the burden of proof very, very seriously. Good. It has to be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So
Erica, don't get in trouble.
No, never. I'm such a scaredy cat with stuff like that. I'll get a speeding ticket because I can step on my, you know, I can step it. But I believe in the justice system.
I do too.
But then 100%. You hear some stories as well that are really scary.
Mm-hmm.
There was another Netflix show that I watched about those brothers making
The Making of a Murder. Yes, it's appalling. Like,
isn't it? Okay, so I'm not the only one that thinks that.
No, you're not the only one. Yeah. No,
and, you know, you think about like, could that be me one day or one of my kids one day?
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, someone that we know, and that's scary.
It's really scary
because I'm a firm believer that if you do something wrong, you have the right to representation, you have the right to be, you know, in a courtroom, and then you see something like that, and you're like, oh man, maybe I won't get a true representation, or I can't afford a good attorney, or right, things like that.
Yeah, no, and then like, and also like, and again, and then that's why it's also important to have to know who your judges are, or like, you know, to be more aware of who you're electing as judges, because, you know, I would see it differently than the judge that was on the case would see it. You know, I saw it as an injustice. They didn't think there was anything wrong with it. So, you know.
I think it's like any other profession. I think that sometimes you have some good apples and bad apples within an industry, just like I'm sure there's some good judges and there's some bad judges. I'm pretty sure about that. And sometimes things get through the cracks.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say good or bad. It's just that I think everybody brings their own experience, you know, experiences into it. And some people's life experiences aren't like other people's life experiences. So like there are some people that believe, for example, officers would never lie or create a case, whereas other people know that they, you know, believe that they would or and do, you know. So it's just, you know, again, it's important to care more about who you're electing on the bench.
So we're going to get ready to wrap up, but because you are Puerto Rican and because I love Puerto Rican food, I have to ask you, where can I get the best jibarito or jibarita? Because I love a jibarita sometimes more than a jibarito. So what's your favorite place to get a jibarito?
Well, you know what? To get the jibarito is, I like Jibarito y Mas on Fullerton and Kimball.
Okay.
I really like that place. But have you ever had mofongos?
I have had mofongos.
Like, so I lately have been on a mofongo kick, and I discovered there's this place. It's right, it's on North Avenue, and I think it's on Wabansky. It's right next to Maternity BVN. It's called El Mofonguito. Oh my God, the mofongos are to die for. I have been trying to tell my parents to go there, and then finally over the weekend, I took them and ordered each. And my father is at the age round. You know, the older you get, the less appetite you have sometimes.
Yeah.
He ate the whole entire box. I couldn't believe it. He was like, oh my God, this was so good. I go, I've been telling you guys. So you have to go to El Mofonguito. It's on North Avenue. And I want to say it's Monticello. Monticello. It's right
North
next
to North Avenue and Monticello. That's where it's at. Yeah.
We'll go ahead.
Well, you actually have to go to Puerto Rico, Erica. You'll get all
I have been to Puerto Rico. I've been to Puerto Rico once.
You'll
before.
Get all the mofongo you want there.
Yes.
But you can't get on the plane just today, right? When you're craving some Puerto Rican food, you can't get on a plane, but you can find a mofongo, really good place.
Just Santiago, I ate mofongo almost every day for the holidays while I was in Puerto Rico. Almost every day.
It's like tamales for Mexicanos. Yeah. No, you eat a tamal every day or two or three sometimes.
I went in November to Puerto Rico and every single day in Hipolito, I was eating mofongo.
Like dragones.
I couldn't get enough. And so even when I came back, I thought for sure I would be like, okay, I'm over mofongos. No, I still
now,
want
give them. Me more.
Yes, I want more.
Give
want
me more.
Yes. So you guys have to go to that restaurant. It is to die for.
Yeah. Everything we're going to try it out.
Yeah, you definitely have to go there.
So we're going to do this. We've been pretty much letting every single one of our guests know that we're going to go to lunch with them or dinner. Yes. So we're going to invite you, and you're going to take us to this mofongo place, and we're going to try it out.
Yes, we got to try it out. We have to try it out. It's a little dive, but you know, it's all the dive restaurants.
The best.
I hope they have flan too.
I don't know if they have flan.
I'm a dessert guy.
You know what? I think they do have flan because I could swear the first time I went there, I'm almost positive they have flan. But let me tell you about flans too. So there's this company called Flamboyant. Oh my God, look them up. You can laugh all you want. I'm serious. I love to eat.
I'm laughing because I love to eat flan, and you're about to get me started. Now I'm going to look it up.
You can look at me and tell I don't skip a meal, right? So I was like, I love to eat. A girl loves to eat. So there's look up Flamboyant. Oh my God, Hipolito, you will go crazy. They're so good.
Our listeners out there, if you're not from Chicago and you come to Chicago, now you know where to get the best mofongo in the city. And now you know where to get the best flan in the city as well.
Absolutely.
We're going to have to tag both of these locations on our podcast when we post it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, well, so, it was so much fun, Beatriz.
Yes.
Judge so Beatriz. I don't know if I should Do I have to say it's Judge Beatriz every time?
I say Judge Santiago.
Okay. I'm like, what's the proper, like doctor, right? Sometimes doctors want to be called doctors every time.
B is fine.
Hey, B.
I love
it was
that.
Great hey, having you. Platicando, charlando en amigos. Great to meet you over Zoom. We can't wait to hopefully meet you in person soon.
I know. I would love to meet you both. Well, I know Hipolito, but I would love to meet you in person.
Yeah, we're going to hopefully put together all of our guests, maybe in a couple of months, all those powerful Latinos, Latinas in a room, which would be amazing, I think.
It would be amazing. Yeah. It would be amazing. And then we could go eat afterwards.
Yeah, always food.
Thank you for listening. We hope you are inspired by today's episode. We will continue to share new stories with you, because we grow from each other's life lessons, our voices are powerful, and because we need each other. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and contact us at thelatinxchronicles@gmail.com.